one time, God, oh my fucking God. So the wheel in the sky keeps on moving, you know, it keeps on grooving. I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow, but I do remember if this was like a cartoon or a video or something, it would have that big old wheel turning and then turning into a hubcap in my dad's old van when he's driving around, like, chain chewing Trident gum and, like, smacking around, talking on his Bluetooth, making all these meetings. He's talking to me, and then suddenly he's talking to someone else, not warning me. Just suddenly he's on the phone, just with his little briefcase, jotting down notes, driving around, doing his business. I don't know why I'm in the car with him. I'm just along for the ride, I guess. And my dad tells me this story about a friend of his or something. So there's this guy, and he's a churchgoer. He goes to church, and there's this guy in his church who's like an adult man with developmental disabilities, Larry. And Larry is always happy, and he's always just smiling and waving, and he's not very bright, and he works at McDonald's. He's like a janitor at McDonald's. And so he sees this guy at church. He like grew up with him basically, and he goes on and lives his adult life, and he lives super close to this McDonald's. And he goes in there and gets coffee every morning. So this guy, living his fucking life, he's like all stressed out in college or whatever. I don't know, I'm just adding stuff. He's like going through his shit. He's like, I'm stressed out, I have to get this done, I have to make this happen. He's like focused on his shit. He goes in, gets a cup of coffee. Larry's mopping and like hysterically waving like, hi, hey Josh, I don't know his name, hey Josh, hi, how you doing today? And he's like, I'm fine, how are you, how are you, Larry? And Larry's like, I'm great. And then he just keeps waving, and the guy Josh, I guess I named him Josh, is like, oh fuck, you know, like, yeah, of course you're great, you stupid son of a bitch. That's what he thinks in his head. So he gets a job, he's like having a great day, he's like working on his shit, excited, goes in to get a cup of coffee at McDonald's, sees Larry's waving like how you doing today, Josh, hey, waving, like really like wagging his arm out like, hey. And he's like, I'm fine, Larry, how are you? Larry's like, I'm so good, I'm very good. And Josh in his head thinks, of course you are, you stupid son of a bitch, you poor son of a bitch. And that's what he thinks in his head secretly. He gets like, years go on, whatever, he falls in love, he goes in, gets a cup of coffee, sees this guy, same thing, he keeps thinking this in his head, he goes through this terrible breakup, goes in, gets a cup of coffee, Larry's waving the fuck out of his arm, just, oh, hi, Josh, how are you? And he thinks, oh, I'm good, I guess. And then he's like, I'm good, too. And then Larry thinks in his head, or Josh, God, stupid. Okay, he thinks, oh, yeah, I bet you are, you poor son of a bitch. And then he thinks in his head, oh shit, like, actually Larry is fine, Larry's great, Larry's always here bright and early every day with a fucking smile on his face doing his simple job, and he feels fine, he's not stressed out, he's not going through the ups and downs that I am, he's not overcomplicating everything at every fucking turn, he's just actually happy and actually doing fine. And it's me who's the stupid son of a bitch. It's me who's the pitiful creature. And And then my dad starts talking to someone else because he's on his fucking Bluetooth. So I'm like, oh, that's an interesting story. And I'm left with my thoughts because he's in his own world, driving around, doing his meetings. And that's something I think about a lot, is just that moment of illumination where it tilts your perspective, you know? Like, so Larry is a prime example of someone who's seated at the helm of the wheel of fortune. They're not living on the rim of the wheel, seeing the ups and downs, going up and down and up and down, and the emotional roller coaster of it all. They're seated at the helm of the wheel. So it's the most comfortable position, watching the tides change and shift and being in your own fucking inner center. In the I Ching, it's all about the movements of nature and the above and the below, and how they come together in all of these divine circumstances to create a situation that is temporal and not stagnant. And sometimes when we think of our lives, we think of it in a stagnation. We think everything is going to be chill. We're going to chill it. We're going to freeze it. We're going to make it permanent. We're going to keep on this one track. And even though there's like hustle and bustle and movement and progress, we don't want paradigm shifts, because we invest so dearly into the little caboodle that we want to nestle into. And when that wheel turns, we're left assed out on the fucking sidewalk, like, I don't know. I felt the wheel turn so many goddamn times in my world, and sometimes I could literally feel it. I could feel it, and this is a weird little phenomenon. I'll feel my bed shaking, and I'll be, you know, what is that brainwave state when you're waking, or when you're falling asleep, and your brain is in between wakefulness and subconscious submergence? You have this little portal of psychic mush, you know? You're in this cloud haze. You're in a purple haze. And in that haze, in the morning and then the evening, I felt literally like my bed was shaking, and that my whole room and the world itself was like on the spoke of a great wheel shifting. And I knew that, I mean, I could almost feel it now, the shifting. I felt it last night. I felt it the night before 9/11. And I felt it many times for other occasions too. And it depends, you know. I could feel if it's a little shift just for my own life, or a bigger shift, and I do feel the shift. So the thing about the Wheel of Fortune is there are pockets of different things, you know. I always think of, look to the minor arcana. So the major arcana displays masterfully the image of a spiritual consequence. And the minor arcana breaks down its manifested form into the elements, which is more textural. You know, it's easier to have a sensation of what it really means when we break it into the five senses, into the elemental forms. So let's just run down. There is the Ace of Swords, and then there's the Ten of Swords. So Ace of Swords is the magician, right? That illumination where you understand the elements finally, right? You're like, I get it. And then the sword is your lungs, your breathing, your thinking, oxygen in the brain, moving, thoughts, moving forward, having a goal, being narrow-minded enough to just focus and get things done. And when that amps up to number 10, you see a figure face down in the muck with 10 swords right in their damn back, all the way down the kundalini, stab, 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 stab. A new sun rising behind them over a body of great water. What does this mean? It's not the death card exactly, but I always think of it as meaning the part of the wheel where everything has to come to an end. The position, the transition of endings. And then what is to come? Ten of Wands, Ace of Wands, when we go back into that magician consciousness, is understanding your vitality, your energy, the flame that moves your arms around, that makes you hysterically wave while you're, shouting across the McDonald's, have a nice day, you know? That energy that keeps you up and moving, your food, how you fuck, like that root chakra stuff. And when we move that into the Ten of Wands, it's a bundle of flames on your back. So much work to do, so much stuff to digest and process and move forward, to move forward consciously and take that energy somewhere great. And let's go down the line a little more. Ten of Cups. And if we move back over to the Ace of Cups underneath the Magician, the illumination and understanding of the preciousness of your emotional cleansing and love flow. So your heart pouring over is, your heart pumps. It doesn't just keep the blood in your heart. It's not just like a little water balloon full of blood. It's moving, it's processing, it's cleansing. So you take in water, you take in whiskey, you take in, tea, coffee, whatever. You take in love, and you process it, and it flows through your body. And the flow of it is so important, the flowing, and that's how you remain healthy in your heart, literally, and also emotionally, spiritually, duh. So when we take it over to Ten of Cups, we see all these hearts coming together and flowing together, creating this super mega amazing meta heart where everyone's coming together in humanity and like bliss, everyone having abundance, everyone sharing love, creating more and more, amplifying, because the flow is intensified when there's more. It's like that stupid ass show about Mormon polygamous. I believe that love should be multiplied, not divided. And that is a whole other bag, whatever. But the concept of community. And I always think of Ten of Cups as one of my favorite cards. And it has this big rainbow above. And the rainbow is like all the different colors coming together to be like the most like. The light that divided it to begin with, right? So if you take a prism, it's just one beam of light, and then it separates into this perfect rainbow. So the rainbow representing all of this diversity, right? And it all coming together is the closest you'll ever have to perfect unity when everyone shows up and connects in pure flowing love. Great. Ten of Cups. And then underneath that is the Ten of Coins. So Ten of Coins is abundance, but let's do the same model here and go zoom over to Ace of Coins right under the Magician. So again, Magician is like, Eureka, I understand the elements. Earth element, resource. Money is a liquid form of resource, but what it really represents is the earthly element. So the coin is like the magical earthly element because it could transform into what, like a sack of potatoes or, a diamond earring, you know, it could be whatever, it could turn into anything. So resources in itself are already that. So physical resources, are the manifested, reality of what the suit of coins is supposed to be. So the Ten of Coins is that plus more resources, not necessarily like industry, but wealth and abundance and security and and the thing about the earth element, unlike the others, there is a little bit more gelling there. So the flow happens in the water and the cups. The flow happens in the swords and the thought and the moving forward. The flow happens in the fire and having that energy and burning and going forward. And then the earth element is like, chill. We're holding it all. We're holding it all. And we have it all. And it's all here and secure and happy and safe. So I often think of the Ten of Coins as representing a happy and secure, loyal, loving marriage or family unit. It's safe, you know, it's holding. It's not a tricky little thing. It doesn't need you to do anything. It just is there. So the Wheel of Fortune, if we just imagine and that it could make these different stops as it turned, these are some ways that it manifests. And you see this incredible dramatic difference between each one of these portals. Some of them are a little similar. Like, I think Ten of Cups is sort of similar to Ten of Coins, in that it's joyous and abundant. But it's also, you know, abundance isn't always a good thing, like the abundance of swords. When you have too many thoughts in your head, when you have too many objectives, when you're going too hard, when you're trying to do too many things, it is overwhelming. You have to simplify the mind. So you would want to lean back over to the Ace of Swords. In the same way that, you know, let's say that Ten of Coins goes upside down inverted. And then that creates like a imprisonment in the manifested realm, the toxicity of capitalism, the nightmare of a hoarder's house. Abundance is not always the blessing that you want, you know. So when we go back into the Magician and see their power of just looking at things that are right in front of you for what they are, truly, in their elemental form, not being overly speculative about the hoarding of it all, you know, that's where we see some empowerment. And but that's a good way to be operating at the helm of the wheel, and the wheel itself will keep turning. There's an angel, there's an order of angel, choir of angels. What are they called? The thrones, or something like that. And they're described as like wheels, interlocking wheels. They're not humanoid. They're angels that are just these wheels. And that blows my mind. And when you look at when you look at these old cards, the Rider-Waite tradition of the Wheel of Fortune, you see these little angels in the corners. And who are they? The lion, the ox, the eagle, and the man. They are the fixed signs, baby. So basically, the eagle is the transcended, transformed Scorpio. That the eagle represents its elated form. It's a spiritual evolution into being able to rise above, going from the inner earth trenches and going through its spiritual path. And a good Scorpio will transcend and mutate into an eagle. And then, you know, the man is, of course, the water bearer, Aquarius. Ox and lion, no shit. Yeah, duh. Leo and Taurus. So why are they reading books? They are often reading books. I don't know. It's weird. The drawing is, what is it telling us? So the idea of the book is like, it is written, you know, something that it's the book represents not only documenting, but also the prediction of things and that things have been precalculated, but also that there's resources to look to, that there's information there. And when I see the four signs of the fixed order and the wheel like that, I think of a grand square. So in astrology, a grand cross. So there, sometimes like all of the signs in a certain order will come together, like a cardinal cross will happen. And that's when the great scrimmage was upon us, and Martin Luther did his declarations and squared off from the fucking Catholic Church because it was a cardinal cross. And cardinal is about going your own way, starting something new, being bold, doing you, whatever. And that's when a perfect time for seeing like these great massive changes and new beginnings. So what would it represent to see a grand cross in the sky with the Wheel of Fortune? Fixed signs are all showing up. So what I know about fixed signs, because I am a Taurus and that is my sign, and I have Aquarius rising and a Scorpio south node. So, yeah, I feel like I have a little bit of a taste of the flavor of the fixed sign, and I would say that it has so much to do with being certain in oneself. Like, there's this unshaking solid core that it doesn't matter what the fuck is going on. You know who you are, and you always have your feet on the ground and in your own way. And to me, that's saying that the wheel is not a chaos wheel. It is a forever wheel of changes and progress and patterns and rhythm and coming around. It's cyclical, of course, but there is that fixed position. So when we see the wheel, it also will, sure, it's a paradigm shift, but also it shakes away the exterior, the aesthetic, the non-essential, and what remains is the primary reality, the fixedness of what we are here for, what's important. And we see that, you know, in our world now, we are in a time of great change, and the wheel changing has shaken away a lot of shit that we're like, oh yeah, it's a time in the season for this bullshit. Yeah, cool, this is fun, I'm into it. And then we have the great wheel change and we're like, like, I don't want to hear someone with their fake ass voice trying to sell me something on Instagram. Oh, I don't think this is funny. Oh, I don't want to hear like people making fun of each other right now. Oh, I just love who I love. I want to connect with those people I care most about. I want to see if everyone's okay. So, I mean, the things that we care about deeply are remaining, they're fixed. The things that are most important are further illuminated. In the same way, when we see the Ten of Swords, like when we come down, when we've had, like, let's imagine we've had a terrible breakup, and we're like, we feel like we got the wind knocked out of us. And what remains important, even in a time where we feel like we've been totally betrayed and defeated, are probably some similar values. And it also might modify the things that we think are important, and being like, actually, this is totally irrelevant, and now I could let it go. But the underlying reality is that we have a strength in us that is always holding us up. And the characters embodied, again, if we're going to break it down in the same way we took the Wheel of Fortune and broke it down into the Minor Arcana, and then went over to the Magician to compare and contrast and see his Minor Arcana, if we broke it down into the fours again, we'll see the character of the Eagle, the Water Bearer, the Ox, and the Lion. What do these characters represent? And why were they chosen to represent the fixed signs? The Water Bearer is the Aquarius, the giver, the scientist, the humanitarian. And within them is the willingness to release and to give, and understanding the the importance of water to heal, to cleanse, to nourish, that it's a life-giving force that they give freely. So you see a character in the zodiac, which is a man, but he's not bearing a sword, he's not dressed for battle, the only thing he's doing is offering water, the source of life. And he is a fixed sign, so he will forever do this. In the Scorpio, see, death, sex, mystery, and all that, right? But when we see the evolved Scorpio transcend into the eagle, we see something that's able to see things from great heights, see a bigger picture, and with the mind of something that has evolved from the underbelly, seeing almost now with X-ray vision, not only on what is on the surface, but what is deep within the crevasses, what's in the underbelly, what is in the hearts and minds and the secrets of all things, and now watching from above, looking down, taking it all in. But a water sign who feels deeply for all the things, but has a tough exterior. So with a deep emotional understanding and with the eyes of an eagle looking big picture, seeing right through the hearts and minds of all creatures below. The Leo, the lion, a creature who is the king of the jungle, this huge beast that's ferocious, whose sounds are enough to paralyze this powerful creature. And lions, they have no fear. They're not afraid because they're apex predators, you know? And what you see is they let things come to them. So they're the lionesses are the main hunters, you know? They're not going around killing all of the gazelles. They're not going around hurting and maiming and exercising their power because they're so powerful. They're peaceful and in order, and they're protective and loving to their pride, their family. And when they feast when they're hungry, and they do it collectively, and they bring it all in for everyone to enjoy. They understand the order of nature. Of course, you know, I think it's no accident that their pride is like kind of a pun, kind of, you know, that they're prideful, and I think part of that pride is wanting to understand and make sure that the order of nature is in balance. They're not hoarding toilet paper, they're not hoarding gazelles, and they feel strong in themselves to understand that they need their community, and they don't need to lash out and hurt anything. They're okay. And then we have the raging bull of Taurus. Taurus, the benevolent, gentle bull. The bull of heaven, the ox. It's this creature which I consider both masculine and feminine, you know. It has these wild, crazy horns, but usually when we see a bull, even though it's majestic, we're not usually totally afraid. But I think that bulls have been incredibly domesticated, you know. They used to be ferocious and still are. I don't know if you've ever been to a rodeo, but they're like these fucking beasts. But they're not raging around all the time trying to fuck things up. Only when provoked do they get angry. Most of the time, they're just chilling, you know. They're chilling, and when they need to rage out, they can. So I think that it's restoring, and sometimes when I think of Taurus, I think of, what is it called? I can't remember the quote. It was like something like, walk softly and carry a big stick. I'm pretty sure that that's not the quote, but it's basically just like, not to flash out aggressively and angrily unless in essentially. So what do we see in all these figures when we look over the great changes? What is important? What are the primary characteristics of these angels that are safeguarding the Wheel of Fortune? Understanding we don't need to hoard. Understanding there's enough resources and we don't need to flash anger or power. That we are able to be content and peaceful with our surroundings. That we're able to give freely. That we're able to see clearly with great perspective. And if we look at what is riding the rim of the wheel, we see Anubis, we see a sphinx, we see a serpent. What could that possibly fucking mean, right? Anubis, aka Imphu, the god of the underworld, is a sort of a dog-headed creature. And so he weighs your heart against a feather to decide if you're worthy to transcend. The Sphinx asks the riddle of you and will devour you if you answer incorrectly. And what the riddle is about the temporalness of being. And the correct answer is awakening to understanding that we will go through transitions from baby to adult to senior citizen, if we're lucky. The snake is an immortal creature for shedding its skin. It can only grow and keep living if it keeps shedding its skin, letting go. So in all of these figures, we see the understanding of mortality and immortality, of being able to pass on or pass through by letting go, letting go, letting go. And how is your heart as light as a feather? You're not hoarding all of the pain. You're not scared and terrorized. That these are all things that you can call on if you need to protect yourself, if you need something. But you don't need to be afraid. You don't need to feel heavy in your heart. That it's okay to let go as the world keeps turning.